This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole deck of galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athletic-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
We do this too, we're bringing that fire. Talking real talk, Kentucky's on fire. From bourbon to ball games, we got that flow. On the We Do This Too podcast, yeah, you know. From country roads to the city lights, they bring the heat, man, every night. We do this too, let's make it clear.
Welcome back, y'all. It's another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. And as always, we are presented to you in partnership with brands that we feel represent the very best of the outdoor industry. So before we get started, we'd like to give a special shout out to Moultrie Products, Uhler's Archery, Threads Custom Bowstrings, G5 Outdoors, Blackburn Apparel Company, Deer Pip Scents and Lures, Vision Clothing, Bluebird Waterfowl Company, Angry Chicken Outdoors, Alps Outdoors, and last but certainly not least, a special, special shout out to the good folks over at Briley's for leaving a legacy of shooting innovation. Whether you need new cameras to elevate the scouting experience, new arrows, or anything for your archery setups, clothing, scent, or whatever it may be, as a supporter of the podcast, you can use promo code WDTTPROMO, that's WDTTPROMO, for 15% off anything on the website at Ullersarchery.com. Some exclusions may apply. With that being said, let's dive into another episode of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast with your host, Mr. Courtney Williams.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Williamson. I got a super special guest on today. He's originally from Georgia, man. He just opened up a barbecue spot here in my hometown. He just opened up this past weekend for the holidays. Sold out 3 days in a row. Barbecue is bussing. Tastes so good, make you want to slap your mama type good. Mr. Clarence Jackson, ladies and gentlemen.
Man, thank you, man. This is a blessing.
Yeah, man. Justin Ward, shout out to Justin, called me and said, man, you need to meet the new owners of Jackson Legacy Barbecue. He's like, he's a black guy, you know, he's got his brother with him. He's from Georgia. And he hunts. I said, give me his number.
Yes, sir.
So when I called him, you know, when I called you, man, I was like, man, you know, I know how it is in this town, you know. And so I just wanted to make you feel welcome, make your family feel welcome. And then, like, if y'all ever needed me for anything, any questions or anything, you know, I'll tell you the God honest truth. You know, I'm so glad that this town has got a, you know, some new faces, and your barbecue's good, and I'm glad that everybody came out this weekend to help you guys out, and y'all sold out. So I'm really glad for y'all, and I hope y'all succeed at that spot. So it's awesome, yeah. Man. I'm proud to have y'all in LaRue County, man.
I appreciate it, man. I remember the day you called me. And right after you called me, I called my dad. I said, hey, man, we got what we're looking for. Because we were, like you said, we hunt, we fish. And when we moved from Georgia, we left behind our hunting club, which, you know, me, my dad, and my brother, we helped manage all the properties there. And right. We were like, man, you know, we have our spot out here that we can hunt, but it's just so underdeveloped right now. And I was like, man, it's just good that now I know somebody in the area that does, you know, similar things as me, so I can know where to get my stuff. I can know what the terrain is like, everything. So I was super excited the day you called me. Like you said, shout out to Justin for that, making that connection, because it was definitely needed for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Justin, man, me and him have been rocking since I can't remember when. We played ball together growing up, like the Ward family, man. They're just good people. And there's a lot of good people in this town. So I kind of wanted to get you on here just to kind of let everybody know in the county, like who you are, you know, what you're all about, kind of tell your story and everything. So
yes, sir.
To start everything off, man, Jackson Legacy Barbecue. So what's the story behind Jackson Legacy?
All right. Jackson Legacy Barbecue. So it goes back, starts with my grandfather, actually, on my dad's side. He made grills. That's what he did. He was a welder, and he also worked with iron. He made burglar bars, like iron security bars, and he made grills. And my dad helped him with that. And he also did it on his own. And then we were known, my family is known for barbecuing. Like every 4th of July, we do a whole hog over the pit. And it was well known in the community and stuff like that. But in 2013, my dad and my mom officially made it a business. And so we were doing that down in Georgia. I'm from Bartow, Georgia, which is about an hour south of Augusta, Georgia. And we were doing that, had a restaurant. It was doing well. We were, you know, engaging our community there. 2019, we bought a food truck, and we're doing well with that, and, you know, put a lot into that so that we could become mobile, do more catering opportunities, things like that. Well, right after that, you know, COVID hit, and it really pretty much over between 2020 and 2021, it just kind of declined. And it declined to the point where we had to kind of stop. And at that point, it was definitely something that I wanted to do. Now, at that time, I had graduated college, and I was off. Actually, I was living in Chicago at the time, working a corporate job. But that was always something that was a plan of mine, was to come back to the business and do that. I just wanted to get a few years of experience, you know, kind of make my degree worth receiving. You know what I mean? I went through 4 years of school. Let me use this degree for a little while. But I always wanted to do the barbecue. And then basically over the course since 2021 to now, it's been a lot of just ups and downs, trying to start it, not being able to. Then last year, we left Georgia, and we actually moved to Cali. Now, during that time, before that time, there was a hurricane. Hurricane Helene came through Georgia and just completely destroyed the area where I'm from. Like, even to this day, there's still trees down, still just a lot left in ruins. So what we had to do was come up here. Now, my grandfather has our property out here in Mount Sherman that we currently have. And at the time, we had not lived on the property, had not developed it really to any degree. The only thing we had, we did put a tiny house on it early last year. When we came out here, me by myself brought pretty much all of our family's valuables after the hurricane, because the hurricane hit at the same time that we were transitioning to Cali. So I brought all my family stuff out here. I stayed out here for about 3 to 4 weeks. And one day I passed by our current location and I was like, man, whoever was there, they were doing pretty well. I was like, man, that little spot right there, that's all I need. I'd be in business. Fast forward, we go to Cali and we're trying to get the barbecue thing started up out there. Long story short, it didn't work out in California. And in around April, we all as a family came out here to Kentucky. We said, we're going to get all hands on deck. We're going to start doing a little bit of work on the property. We're going to come out here on vacation and relax, because, you know, we some country folks and we was out there in Cali, so we couldn't do our country thing, right? I hadn't been four-wheeling in some months, hadn't been fishing, hadn't done any hunting, hadn't walked through the woods. So we was like, we're going to come out here to our property and just enjoy ourselves. We were here from a Sunday through a Friday. The Thursday, the day before we're about to leave, my parents actually passed our current location in that same spot that I had passed, that I said that's all I need, was now up for lease. Now, mind you, back in September when I passed it, they were booming. There was a lot of people outside. The smoker was rolling. Well, now it's for lease. And make a long story a little shorter, in the matter of from the last week of April up until this week, we've gotten the place. I drove from Cali to here. Me and my brother had to go down to Georgia, get all of our restaurant equipment from our old spot, bring it up here, and we opened. Like you say, this past weekend was our opening weekend. And sold out 3 days in a row. We're open from Thursday through Saturday, sold out every day. And yeah, man, it's just been a blessing. I couldn't have imagined or dreamt or strategized this. You know, I truly got to just give honor to God for just the way this is all played out and the way it's lined up, man. So that's how we got here.
That's dope. Yeah, I was really hoping for success for you guys, because, you know, the other owners that owned Arrowhead Barbecue before you, they were really successful. They were highly successful. So I was like, man, the next person that comes in here is going to have, you know, big shoes to fill. Cause right. You know, everybody loved Arrowhead Barbecue. So I was like, I hope whoever's got it now, you know. And then I met you, you know, and I seen y'all sold out the first day. I said, okay, they off to a good start. And second day, I said, all right, here we go. Then the third day, I said, oh, they good. I said, man, as long as they keep this up, I said they ain't gonna have no problems whatsoever. So yeah.
I'll tell you, in the past, so we officially started working on the place, like I said, the last week of April, and over the course of the time we've been doing that, me and my brother, we've been up there pretty much every day. And we've been working, you know, we've had a lot of general contractors, plumbers, electricians we've been working with. And pretty much everybody that's come up there said, man, I hope y'all are good as the last place. I hope y'all know what used to be here, basically. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, man, they're really trying to put the pressure on us. Now, me, you know, I try to stay as humble as I can. But one thing I do know is I know I work a smoker. And so I wasn't worried if I was going to do my part. I was just worried about the, you know, how people would receive it. You know, right. Barbecue, there's a lot of regionalism, different places, like different flavor profiles and different sauces and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't know what was generally accepted around here. And, you know, over the course of the weekend, I have heard a few people say they weren't the biggest fans of our sauce. It is a Georgia style sauce. We kind of made it our own. And I heard a few people say, you know, different things, but overall the reaction has been nothing but positive. You know, we may make a few adjustments on our end just to serve the community. Obviously, you know what I'm saying? You got to put the customer first, but overall people say they love the food, and it's worth all the work that goes into it, you know?
For sure. Yeah. Me personally, like, I grew up, my dad's from Memphis, so I grew up on Memphis style.
Yes, sir.
And then, you know, as I got older, started kind of wandering the world a little bit, I guess United States, you know. Then I started liking the Texas style a little bit, then the Kansas mm-hmm. City style. I mean, there's so many different styles of barbecue that you can get into. So kind of what sets your barbecue apart from, say, like a Memphis style or a Texas style barbecue?
So I jokingly, a couple months ago, coined the term Jackson style barbecue with my family. It was something we're kind of going to roll with, actually. And the reason I say that is because we take aspects of just about every style that you've just mentioned and kind of integrate it into one.
Yes.
And kind of what I mean by that is, so in Texas, you know, they like to use the offset smokers, and they primarily only season their meat with salt and pepper. And it's mainly beef products that they like to use. You know, the brisket, the beef rib, that's what they like down there in Texas. Memphis, you know, you got your flavor profiles there. South Carolina, which is closer to where I'm from, you got your vinegar-based sauces, your mustard-based sauces. But a couple of the things that make it Jackson-style barbecue is, one, we like to use vertical smokers. So we don't use the offset like they use in Texas, which means essentially you got your firebox here and your meat over here and your air flows in kind of a horizontal pattern. We like to use vertical smokers where the fire is up under the meat and rises up on top of. The reason for that is when that fire comes up on the meat, the fat drips right down onto the heat. And what that does is it actually burns the fat and it rises back up on the meat, and that flavors the meat while it's cooking. So that's the thing behind that. Our first restaurant, we use some, they're called drum smokers, which are basically like 55-gallon drums.
Oh, yeah, and I've seen those.
My dad made, we had three of them, and he made those from scratch. And those were the smokers that we used in our first restaurant. Now, those aren't good for cooking at volume. Those are actually mainly used for like competition barbecue. But that's the whole theory behind that. We, you know, we have to use those type of smokers. We have our rub and our sauce, which were directly formulated to complement each other. And then, you know, there's a couple other things like that. But that's the theory behind it. It's Jackson style barbecue. It's very detail oriented. Everything is on purpose, and everything kind of complements each other.
That's what's up. Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you cleared it up, because I know there's a science to everybody that does barbecue. I know there's a science behind it. You know, you just can't throw some meat on the grill or on the smoker and expect it to come out right. You know, you got to season it right, or how you want to season it, and, you know, make sure it's there. It can't be too dry. Exactly. You know, it can't be overdone. It can't be half done. It's got, you got to kind of find that happy medium. So
exactly.
So coming from Georgia, you know, after the hurricane, moving to Cali, you know, your parents come by and seen, you know, Arrowhead was up for lease. Like, tell me about some challenges that you guys kind of were facing when y'all finally got their building, because I know there were some. It's got to be.
Yes, sir. So the first one I'll tell you is something we didn't know coming in here. Kentucky has one of the strictest plumbing codes in the entire country. So there's a general national plumbing code, and then each state has their own plumbing code. Most states just align their plumbing code with the national code. Well, Kentucky, that's not the case. And the way that affected us is, so our smoker is actually on our food truck, and we have to get the food truck and the building, you know, licensed and registered to be able to use it. Well, the plumbing code is so different that we had to rip out our entire plumbing system and replace it in about a day and a half to meet the timing for our inspection, for our health department inspection.
Oh, so man.
Plumbing code was one. Getting our equipment in the building alone, because the doors are a little bit smaller than your standard door. So there was a couple pieces of equipment we had to break down completely and then reconstruct once we got them in the door. You know, finding contractors in general was quite the challenge, because we don't know anybody here. You know what I mean? We're not from this area. So finally, we went through a couple plumbers and a couple electricians before we finally found the people who were able to meet our needs and were able to communicate effectively with us, you know, and able to get these things done in a timely manner. Because like I said, this has all been put together in a matter of just under 2 months. It's about 7 weeks from the time we signed the lease to the time we opened. So it's been a full-on blitz from the whole family over the past month and some change. And just that alone, getting everybody here. I was in Cali. My sister, she was in Cali as well. My brother was in Atlanta. So just everybody even getting here was quite a challenge as well.
That's what's up. But yeah, I figured, man, because I knew usually anybody that moves somewhere from, you know, like where you're from, Georgia, moving to Cali, then coming back to Kentucky, like there's always some challenges that somebody's going to face trying to get open, especially a restaurant business, whether it's coding, you know, whether you got to meet this standard code or meet this standard code, meet that standard code. So I'm glad y'all got all that fixed, man.
Yes, sir.
So
just in the nick of time.
For sure. So in your personal opinion, everything that y'all have on the menu, which y'all have a menu that has literally everything that anybody could want.
Yes, sir.
What menu item I'd say that represents Jackson Legacy Barbecue the best?
If I had to say anything, I'd probably say the brisket.
The brisket. Brisket's fire.
I appreciate that.
And I've had a lot of briskets, man, and I'm telling you, like, I ain't saying this because you on here, but I told my wife the same thing. As soon as I bit into that brisket, I was like, they know what they're doing. Because I've had some brisket that's like real tough, and I've had some brisket that like wasn't seasoned enough, or it felt like it wasn't done.
Yeah,
like yours was a combination of flavor and wasn't overcooked, wasn't undercooked. Like it was, like I said, yes, it was that perfect. I was like, yeah, they keep doing this. I said, they're going to be here a long time.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that, man. It's been, I'll say the reason I say that one represents us the best is because that is truly a testament to being dedicated to your craft and getting it right. Brisket is generally something that is considered like a Texas style cut, right? They like the beef out there. Down in Georgia, people cook it, but most of the time when they cook it, they like chop it. They don't slice it just like in the Texas style. And additionally, that's something that people generally only season with salt and pepper. You hear everybody say that brisket only needs salt and pepper. We use more than that. I can't tell you what it is, but I can tell you we use more than that. And I can also tell you that generally people only cook brisket over oak. And sometimes I've seen people use like mesquite. I can tell you that ain't it either. And those are the two reasons why it tastes the way it tastes. And barbecue, the main ingredient is the wood that you use. That's the main flavor that you're going to get is based on whatever variety of wood you use. So the woods that we use and then the way we season it. But the key thing is, what I can tell you is, we cook it for 10 to 12 hours, which is standard, but we rest it for 12 to 16.
Okay.
And that is where the tenderness comes in. That has allowed the brisket, which has a lot of fat within the meat, has allowed that fat to render down to a nice state to where it's not chewy, it's tender, but it's keeping the meat moist and it's not drying it out. If you let it render too low, all the fat will drip out and there won't be any in the meat at all. It'll be dry, and you don't want that either. So we kind of got that middle ground, like you said, and I'm glad to hear that review, because that's exactly what we're looking for.
Yeah, I'm wanting to taste them ribs next and that chicken.
Yes, sir.
I was telling my wife, because I said, man, we need to get up, you know, they get in there early. Because last time, man, we was kind of just hanging around the house. My wife was doing some stuff on the computer. You know, I took me a little nap. I said, as soon as we get up, I said, we got to go. And as soon as we got there, I seen Karen, which is Justin's wife. Yep. And she's like, did y'all order online or did y'all order? I said, no, we just got here. He's like, man, they just sold out. I said, you serious? And she's like, yeah. I was like, man, I hope they got something in here. You know, like Denzel, like I'm leaving with something.
Yeah.
You know?
Man.
So luckily we got, you know, that pulled pork and that brisket, man. I was like, okay, yeah. They're going to be around a while. So
I appreciate that. And I had a couple people that came up to the window and told me that you had told them about us. So I just want to say thank you for that. I really do appreciate that. It was one gentleman, and then one guy actually said he was your cousin. Said he came to the window. I was like, okay, yeah, I hadn't met you in person yet, but I know we talked over the phone a couple of times. I was like, man, he really did tell people about it. So
I did, man. I really did. Like, as soon as I, you know, got off the phone with you that day, and people was asking, do you know the owners? I said, well, I don't know him personally. I said, but I'll talk to him on the phone. You know, Justin gave me his number, and I said, man, you know, I said, we really need to support him, you know, just to get his name out there or whatever. I said, but the thing is, I said, the food got to be good. I said, right. a lot of people have tried to, you know, have restaurants here in the LaRue County area, and, you know, the food will start off, you know, fantastic, and then all of a sudden, you know, quality kind of goes down. You know what I'm saying? Right. So, as long as these people keep everything good, I said they'll be all right. So, I was telling everybody, I was like, you know, let's support them. They opened up July 3rd, 11 o'clock. I said everybody get in there, you know, see what they're about, and then, you know, leave them some, give them some reviews. I said, if you like this, you know, tell them what you like. Yeah. But I kind of want to say, like, from a barbecue standpoint and from, like, a restaurant standpoint, like, how do you all figure out, like, what type of sides, like, serve? Because, like, you know, like, my uncle owns a barbecue business in Memphis. Like, he's got, you know, like, cabbage, you know, macaroni and cheese. He's got, like, 15 different items. Mm-hmm. But then there's like a place down in Owensboro, little hole in the wall in Owensboro. He only does like three sides. Mm-hmm. Then my cousin Tiffany, when she had her barbecue spot in Radcliffe called Fed Up Barbecue, she offered, like, you know, a few sides. So how do you figure what sides to do and what sides not to do?
So what we have now has been defined or refined over the years, because there was a time we tried to offer a variety of things, and even our current menu, it rotates, like our vegetables rotate weekly. But okay, we've gone through a lot of things, and we've got cut it down to the things that we feel we can do the best on a consistent basis. Like you said, it's very common in barbecue across the country to be hit or miss. You know, some days it's good, some days it's not. And what we try to do is try to do things in a process that we can repeat over and over again, so we know what we're handing out the door. You know what I mean? Every time you come, I want it to taste like the first time you came. And so that's how we got down to the sides. And, you know, big shout out to my mom. She's been the main one who was taking on that side of the business. You know, at first it was my dad, and now me. We mainly focus on the meat, because that's the main thing everybody's coming for. But right, my mom and my sister, they handle all the sides and the baking with the desserts. That's my sister by herself. She's great with that. That was actually the first thing that we sold out of, were the cookies. And my sister, we do it's like a 6-inch deep dish cookie. And it's my sister's recipe. And she was working in that kitchen, and we sold out of those. That was one of the first things we sold at, that and the rib. So, but yeah, it was just over the years kind of going through what we did well. And one thing we always try to do is we try to keep a vegetable along with, you know, like your mac and cheese and your baked beans, to kind of give you like a full dinner experience. Because sometimes just those things alone is like a cookout experience. But we want to give you like a full hearty meal. And so we feel like adding a vegetable with those things, like the mac and cheese and the baked beans, helps kind of complete your plate all the way around.
Right. It makes sense. Yeah. So coming from Georgia, you know, so your grandfather was basically kind of the martyr of Jackson Legacy. Are there any, like, special recipes or family traditions that, like, he's passed down that I don't want you to get into specifics, but, like, I know he's got some that probably, so, like, set y'all apart from other people, you know what I'm saying?
So what I can tell you is the techniques that we use, and the whole hog really is where this all started. Especially my dad, like, he'll tell you the first time he ever really was barbecuing on anything was 4th of July weekend, just like this weekend, doing a whole hog over a coal pit every year. He did his first whole hog. I think he said he was 9 the first time he did it by himself. And that, if you've never done that before, that is an all-night experience. They would start at about 11 that night, and that thing would get done around 11 to noon the next morning, and you're shoveling coals under this pit, flipping the hog, turning the, it's a whole lot different than even what we do. But I would definitely say those techniques and understanding, because on the whole hog, that is where the concept of the fat dripping on the fire back up onto the meat that we do today, that's where that comes from.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was in Arkansas. I was a kid. And I don't remember what we were down there for. Me and Dad and a bunch of my aunties and uncles, I don't know if we had a relative that lived down there. But we got down there, and they had, like, you know, barbecue and stuff like that. And we kind of got down there the night before, and kind of the OG of the clan was an older black gentleman, probably in his 80s at the time. And he was digging, like, a big hole in the ground. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what in the heck is he doing? Dad said, yep, he's about to put a hog in there. I said, huh? He's like, he's about to put a hog in there. I said, that's like, what's what we're about to eat tomorrow? So, like, I seen him take the hog, and he wrapped it up in, like, this cloth.
Mm-hmm.
He put it down in there, and like I said, he had some coals or whatever. Then he put, like, a piece of aluminum foil over top of it with this big old rock. And I was like, that's the first time I'd ever seen that, you know? And
yeah. Then,
as I got older, you know, going down, you know, YouTube, stuff like that, I seen more and more people, you know, from the South, you know, down there doing some stuff like that. So I was like, man, I wonder where that originated from. Do you know? Is that a Southern thing?
Yes, I do. So if you want to learn more, there's a book called Black Smoke. And actually what it goes into is the history. It's basically black history and barbecue. But make a long story short, barbecue originated from the Native Americans. Okay. And the settlers that came here took it and, of course, made their little modifications. But what they stole, essentially, I hate to say it, but was that what you're talking about, cooking meat in the ground with heat over low temperatures, basically overnight. That's the original barbecue. It's taking an entire pig, cooking it in a hole in the ground, covering it, and essentially letting the meat and the fat render overnight. Okay. Like I said, over the course of some years, it turned into a thing where, of course, we were the ones doing all the cooking, and we started making our tweaks. And where the roots of all of the different styles of barbecue come from are based on the resources of the people who were in those areas, what they had to use. That's really where all those styles come from. And of course, wherever you live and whatever is offered to you is what you like. So people kind of stuck to those different styles because that was what was available to them in their area. And that's what their taste buds grew to like. But that is actually where that comes from, is the people who were there cooking had to use what they had to create these different styles. And that's where these styles that you know, see today come from.
It makes sense because I'm a big historian. My grandmother was a big historian. She taught University of Tuskegee. She Fisk University down in Nashville. I think she was at Kentucky State here too. So anytime we got in trouble, you know, she'd whoop us, of course, and then she'd make us read like a book, like a history book.
Mm-hmm.
And you better read it because she had her test.
Yeah.
That she would make you, you know, go through. So as I got older, you know, and taking history classes and stuff in high school and even through college, like some of these, you know, things about black history and even just regular history, like I knew the answers to because of my grandmother.
Yeah.
And I can't remember exactly what book it was, but it was talking about like how the slaves basically got all the scraps from the big house. And essentially that's where soul food comes from, because we basically got all the scraps and somehow, you know, those, you know, slaves would make like whole meals out of these things.
Yes, sir.
But it was like fantastic food, you know, just that's
exactly
like,
right,
you know, because we didn't get like, you know, the good stuff like the pork shoulders and the briskets, mm-hmm, and all that. We got everything that was left over. So we basically had to use what we had to provide a meal for, you know, our families, you know, on that plantation at the time. So
a quick example of that, I didn't mean to cut you off, but a quick example of that is actually the chicken wing. There was a point in time where the chicken wing was thrown away. And then, of course, we took it because that's what was offered to us. And you look today, and there's wing spots everywhere in the country.
Everywhere in the country. That's insane, too, man.
Yeah, because it's insane.
They threw it away, and now, like, that's what most people, when you mention chicken, like, let's go to a wing spot. You know, let's go to Wingstop. Let's go to Buffalo Wild Wing, you know. Yes, that's, sir. Like, probably the most, one of the most, you know, biggest things in America right now.
Yeah, that's one of the most sought out after pieces of meat on the chicken, for sure.
That's
another quick thing. You said Tuskegee University. That's actually where my parents went to school.
Really?
They went, they met there, and they got married the day before they graduated at the chapel that's on campus at Tuskegee.
That's dope. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah, my grandmother, man, she was one of them ladies, man. She was real quiet. She didn't say much. But when she talked, like, you listened, because she was full of wisdom. This is my dad's mother. I didn't know my mom's mother. I was she died before I was born, but I don't remember.
Okay.
But like my grandmother, man, she'd always go out every morning and she'd read her Bible. She'd come in and if we were down there, she'd cook breakfast for us because she didn't see us that much. So she'd cook breakfast for us and I'd just sit out on the front porch with her for hours, just talking to her about history and talking to her about, you know, our people and how we grew up and how we came from nothing, basically.
Yeah.
And just listening to her talk, man, I think it's like the reason that history is such a big thing with me now. You know, I used to read a lot because of her and just listening to how she grew up and, you know, the hard times that she come through and, you know, just getting an education, you know, as an African-American woman back in those days and the right to vote back in those days and stuff like that, man. It's just, it's crazy how much our people have come through to get to where we are today. You know, we're still fighting some battles back, you know, that Martin and Malcolm were fighting, but I feel like it's getting a whole lot better.
It is. And like you said, we still got work to do. I think the way that we can continue to head in that right direction is to honor and remember what those that came before us did. Like you're saying, just hearing some of the things that, you know, my grandfather and grandmother told, you know, me about what it was growing up down there in South Georgia and what they went through. It is, and to look at what I'm able to do today, it's only because of what they went through back then. So that's kind of the reason why we honor our business with the legacy of my, you know, the Jackson legacy, because it's just what they had to go through to even be able to open a business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My grandfather had a third grade education. So I definitely resonate with that.
Yeah. Yeah. My mother, I think, was the first on her side to go to college. Cause my grandfather, he was 97 years old when he passed away. He was a farmer. Mm-hmm. Couldn't read, couldn't write. Only thing he could write was his name, you know? And, just listening to his stories, you know, coming up, you know, going through the Great Depression and what they had to eat, stuff like that. It just resonated with me, you know. I just love watching them talk and listening to their stories. And it's kind of like me now with this podcast, man. Like just listening to people's stories of how they grew up in the outdoors, and you know, it. We all have a kind of a very similar story, but it comes from different parts of the United States. Like when I grew up watching TV and stuff, like I never seen anybody that looked like me on any of these outdoor channels.
Yep.
And listening to other people, I guess we thought we were the only people of color in that particular town or state that did that. But now, man, listening to all these people that I've, you know, had on the podcast or just getting on Instagram now, dude, I can name you probably 250 to 500 people that hunt and fish. We just, you know, the social media world, man, it blew up and you can get on there and see it. But back then you didn't have that. You just had your hunting shows and your DVDs and stuff like that. So it's cool to see that come full circle. But
yeah, same thing for me. I definitely resonate with that. Like growing up, you know, the only other black people I knew that hunted were my dad and my brother. So right. Same thing you were saying, you're watching TV and you see these guys and they have these fancy shows. And I remember I used to, every Saturday, me and my dad, we watched Bill Dance Outdoors. And I love that. Yeah. I love watching Bill Dance with my dad. And then, but there were a couple of times I'd be like, man, is there anybody, like you said, that looked like me that do it? And everybody up until we eventually, you know, we were part of a hunting club down in Georgia. Until we joined that hunting club, which was all black, the only people that I knew that enjoyed the outdoors in the same way I did were all my family members. So, yeah, I can definitely resonate with that.
Heck yeah. Well, that seems like a good segue to get into the other side of Clarence Jackson. So,
yes, sir.
Hunting, outdoors, fishing. How did you and your brother get introduced to the outdoors?
Through my daddy. Like I say, growing up, he was brought up that same way, and his daddy was brought up that same way. My family, really on both sides, actually, but especially on my dad's side, hunting and fishing and, you know, agriculture. My grandfather on my dad's side was a farmer. We just like being outside, man. So that was our weekends. You know, growing up, me and my brother, we played football, and we would go to school, work out, practice, go to the woods. That was our routine. It was like that. And it's just grown over the years, and we've gotten more and more into it. And really now we're at a point where we're wanting to be able to invite other people into that space too. Because basically all of my friends and fraternity brothers, they see me doing those things, and they're like, man, that looks really interesting, but they've just never done it before. So now I'm at a place where I'm introducing people to hunting and fishing, and to be able to see how that is spreading it has been a blessing. But yeah, that coming into it was just my daddy, man, taking us hunting and fishing. And, you know, early on, we didn't really know what we were doing. We just knew we were outside and we were with our daddy, so we were fine.
So I just heard you mention fraternity.
Yes, sir.
Divine Nine. I was about to say.
Yes, sir.
I was either going to say Alpha or Sigma.
No, sir. Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated.
Divine Nine, okay.
Yes, sir.
I was about to say, I said, when I first met you, you was giving me kind of alpha vibes.
Yeah.
You know, I said, I know he ain't a Q. And I said, he's got to be the Alpha or Sigma. So, okay. Glad you cleared
my actually, funny enough, my granddaddy was a Sigma, but now Alpha, I got an uncle that's an Alpha. My mom is a Delta. Got a couple aunts that are AKAs. We got a lot of D9 in my family.
Man, we got a bunch too, man. So my mom never played, but she was back in the day when the Qs had what they call the Q pearls.
Yeah, okay.
And then I got an uncle that's a Q. I got some family members, like my closest cousin Lamont, he's a Sigma. I got a couple cousins Alphas. My cousin Candace, she's an AKA. We got some Deltas in the family, and we got, like I said, we got pretty much the whole Divine Nine in our family. And it's, just coming from different walks of life. Like growing up, man, like watching my uncle, I wanted to be a Q so bad.
Yeah.
And got to school and met some of the Qs, and some at the time, you know, I ain't gonna mention no names, but I was like, I don't like some of these dudes. Like,
yeah,
you know, and then, you know, they graduated. I was like, okay, I'm gonna get online, man. And I just never did it. And it's something I kick myself in the butt about all the time now. Cause like growing up, man, I always wanted to be a kid. I wanted to go to Grambling State. It was like my spot, man, cause I loved their marching band.
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be a Q at Grambling State. It just didn't work out that way. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, man. So what college did you go to?
I went to Georgia Southern University down in Statesboro, Georgia.
Statesboro. Okay.
Yep.
Heck yeah, man.
Graduated in spring 2020.
That's what's up. That's cool, man. Yeah, growing up, so you saw talking about your dad and everything. So did y'all have, because I know growing up here where I grew up, like I grew up hunting rabbits and stuff with my dad, squirrels, doves, quail. Like we didn't have no turkeys, no deer growing up. Now my place is crawling with it. So was you mostly small game, or was you hunting, you know, Big game. So,
actually, we kind of went inverse of that. I started out hunting deer. Like the first hunt I ever went on was deer with my dad. And then when I was around middle school age, like 12 or 13, that's when we joined our hunting club, which really opened our horizon. Because before that, we didn't really have a set place to hunt. We would just had friends and people we knew that let us come with them. But once we got with our hunting club down there, the hunting club had, I can't even remember, thousands of acres. I can't even remember how much it is. But that's when I did my first dove hunt. And I fell in love with it because it was a lot, you know, it's a lot more high paced, a lot more action throughout the day. I can talk and enjoy everybody who I'm hunting with. You know, I ain't got to sit still. And I was younger at the time. So that was kind of, that bothered me a little bit, having to be quiet and sit still. So that's when we started dove hunting. And then after that, I got into hog hunting. To this day, you know, deer is the main thing I like to hunt, but I think my favorite types of hunt are just hog hunting, even though they're pests and they tear up your land. Maybe it's because I barbecue. I just love hunting hogs, man.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I've been wanting. I've been telling my wife, I said, I've got to do it this year. You got to take me, somebody's got to take me on a hog hunt. Like, I want to kill a hog, something awful.
I would love to.
With old Trusty back here. I need to.
Yes, sir.
I don't care if it's with a rifle bow or what, but I would love to go on a hog hunt. Like, I've been wanting to go for the past, like, 10 years. It just seemed like stars don't ever align for me.
Man, it's some places down in Georgia, especially South Georgia, where, you know, there's some farmers that'll pay you to come kill their hogs because they can't get them off their land.
Really?
So, yes, man, they just, they reproduce so quickly and they eat up everything they see. And it's like they can't. Especially down in Texas, too, man. Definitely down there. They can't kill them all. You kill as many as you want, day or night. Use just about whatever you want to. Just get them off their property. That's what they want.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to have to get that together. Because I got to kill me a hog this year, for sure. But
yeah, that definitely.
What then, coming from South Georgia, like, do y'all, what's the style of hunting down there? When y'all hunt deer, do y'all hunt with dogs, or do y'all just... You know,
so we got a little bit of everything. My uncle, I got an uncle who lives down near Savannah, Georgia, and he's a part of a club where they do hunt dogs. They hunt deer with dogs. I've never done that personally. Most of the time, we're sitting up in tree stands in the woods, or we hunt over fields. A lot of the properties that were part of our hunting club were actually leased from black farmers that wanted us to get the deer off their property the same way I'm talking about with the hogs. So we'd have, you know, we set up a box blind and I'm looking over a field that might be, you know, I might have a 300-500 yard shot across the field, peanuts or corn, sunflowers or whatever it may be. So those are the main two types of terrains that we were hunting down there in Georgia. And me personally, I am mainly, I like to use rifles. I like the long shot. You know, I got my 30-06 and I take that thing with me. I hunt everything with that 30-06. Last year was my first year I used a crossbow. I still haven't gotten to the compound bow yet. You know, I'm easing my way into it.
You gotta get into it, dog.
Man, I'll tell you what, practicing with that crossbow before I even took it into the woods, I was like, okay, I get why people like this. And that's a crossbow. And I know it's even more practice you gotta do with a compound. And I think it takes the level of hunting and the skill required to get that kill to the next level. And that's why people love it so much, just because of all you got to put into it to do it well. So I'm starting to get it now. Growing up, I was like, well, I don't want to do that. That's harder. You got a shorter range. You know, you can't shoot out as far, and your scent, you got to manage a lot more intensely and all that. I'm like, you're making it harder yourself. But now that I'm starting to grow and mature and I'm in it for the enjoyment, not just trying to kill something for some meat, I'm like, okay, now I want to start getting into this bow hunting thing, man. So I'm just now really kind of delving and getting into that area.
I guess. Yeah, we'll talk off air, man. I might have something for you.
Okay. All right.
You might have something for you, man. But yeah, I got into this out. Like, anybody that tells you that, especially my best friend, like, I got him into hunting, and now he is strictly archery. You'll meet him. His name's Holden. You know, I've been telling him about you too. So I was like, you know, we got another hunter that we probably gonna have to add to the group. You know, Clarence and his brother. You know, they here. You know, they're a long way from home. You know, so anytime that, you know, I've got the opportunity to take you or your brother somewhere, you know, if y'all can go, y'all more than welcome to come with me. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
But I was that same way. I like that long shot.
Yeah.
But like now I feel like anybody from 3 years old to 100 years old can pick up that rifle, put that scope up, take a shot, 100 yards, 200 yards, whatever. With a bow, that thing, I won't personally take a shot past 40 yards. That's where I feel comfortable. But, like, it's just getting that deer, hog, whatever, closest to you as possible without him or her smelling you, and just pulling back, going through your sight sequence and watching that arrow fly. It's like, I call it poetry in motion. Like, it's
– yeah.
And I'm telling you, the first time that you harvest something with your bow, I won't necessarily say you'll put the rifle down, but you'll be more prone to pick up that bow every time you go out in the woods.
Just about everybody that I've talked to has had that same thing. Mm-hmm. I've heard that a couple of times. People are like, man, once it gets in your system, man, you can't help it.
Yeah.
Now, my brother, he does that. He is more into the archery than I am. He's been in it for a couple of years. And he actually likes to use a saddle stand.
Okay, so yeah.
He walks through the woods, just finds a tree, and just climbs up. And he's like, this is where I'm going to hunt today. And I'm like, man, you are crazy. But I will tell you, he's been able to get into some spots on our properties that I haven't. And he's seen some deer that I haven't as well. So he's on to something with that. But I think I'm just now getting to the point where I'm ready to raise the level of difficulty a little bit when it comes to hunting. Because for a long time, I'm like, I'm coming to these woods to come out with something. So I'm going to find the easiest path to get to that point. But it's like, you know, as you grow up and, you know, you get bored with that after a while.
Yeah, me and my buddy Trey and my buddy Jay Cam, we've got another podcast called New Jack Archers. Mm-hmm. And we got this guy named Jerry in Nashville. He custom built all three of us saddles. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody that knows me, I'm a big dude. I don't do tree stands. I don't do heights.
Yeah.
But we were out in Oklahoma, and they had this guy that basically constructed this big piece of metal. It looked like it's basically, if you don't have a tree in your front yard that you can use, you can buy this piece of metal from him, and it simulates you in a saddle. And I'll send you the picture here in a little bit. But, like, now I'm 300 pounds. And, you know, I'm getting up in this saddle, and the dude was like, all right, you're good. You're locked in. I'm on this platform. He's like, lean back. And I'm like, if I lean back and this thing comes on me, I said, man, you're going to have a problem. Yes, but, dude, I lean back, and I'm like, okay. And you can lean to each side of the tree, you know, and I'm like rocking back and forth. I said, dude, this is actually really comfortable. So. But I don't know how to use like the ropes and stuff just yet. And I don't have a platform. So like, I got a buddy of mine named Jason. He's going to come out before the season starts and kind of walk me through everything that I need to do. Cause I'm going to try to actually hunt from it this year because like, it's super comfortable. And like you said, you can get in a lot of places that you wouldn't be able to get in a blind or a tree stand.
Yep.
And if, like I said, them deer don't know you there, and I got a nice sunflower field that's coming up pretty good. And I've had deer come in there every night, and I want to put that saddle somewhere close to there where I can get a pretty decent shot. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to it. I just got to figure out what I'm doing because I ain't going to go in there blind and mess around and fall back and it don't hold me, and I end up flipping across that fence that's back there. So
yeah, you don't want that at all,
man. But so how does being in nature and like, you know, being out in the woods and in the outdoors, like, impact your mindset as a business owner?
I tell people all the time, nature is where I find God.
Facts.
It is something about seeing the way that the woods naturally take care of themselves that kind of reminds me that God's going to take care of me. You know, these trees and these plants growing and this stream that's flowing and these fish, they can't talk, they can't walk, they can't speak, but they're just fine. And oftentimes just sitting out there in the woods, I may not see something, but just kind of observing nature, smelling that fresh air, it is where I find God every time, man. And even to this day, you know, so it's something I'm trying to get better at, but I've been trying to practice meditation. And being out here, these woods are so different than Georgia, man. That's the first thing. But going out in Mount Sherman and just sitting in those woods, it has just brought me so much peace, especially like I told you about the blitz we've had to put on these past 2 months to get this thing open. And there's been some days where I've just gone out there whenever I have an hour or two and just sat and just said nothing. You know what I mean? And that's where I go. That is my go-to place. So that's why I love hunting so much. You know, there have been many times I've gone hunting and not killed anything. But every time I've gone, I've enjoyed myself. And that's why.
Yep. I tell everybody that, man. That's where I find peace. That's where I have some long talks with God, you know, whether I'm going. I tell people, you know, you need to talk to God. You need to praise God, whether you're going through good, whether you're going through bad. You know, you want to give him praise at all times, you know. But, you know, a lot of times I find myself when I'm out in the woods, you know, thanking God for allowing me to be out there. You know, somebody wants to be out in the woods, but can't be because whether, you know, they might be having illness or something or something's going on where they can't be out there. So I always try to give him praise for allowing me to be out there for, you know, another time. And then I'll just sit there and, you know, listen to the woods open up. And we just had some long, like long talks, like I'm sitting here talking to you, you know, and, you know, trying to figure out what my next step's going to be. And, you know, praying for my son and my wife and my family. And
yep.
it's where I find my peace, man. It's just amazing, especially during, I tell people during spring turkey season, man, when you get out there and the woods open up, you hear them turkeys gobbling and them crows start gobbling and the owls, man, and the birds.
It's crazy.
It's one of the experiences you can't explain unless you're out there.
Yes. Yes. I definitely agree with you on that one.
So it's pretty dope, but, so deer hunting, you know, growing up or whatever, I know that you've got some recipes coming from a barbecue background.
Sure do.
Cooking up wild game. Can you share a few of them with me? Are they yeah, secret?
Nothing about that is a secret. I tell you with deer, man, it's so tough. Like you really can't smoke deer because they're so lean.
Right.
So with deer, mainly it's about I got a couple different marinades and I'll share them with you that just give you different flavor profiles. But like my favorite piece on the deer is that backstrap. You know, yes, that's sir. The most tender part. I'm pretty much with the deer. If I get one process, I'm getting the backstrap, I'm giving some cube steak, and I'm giving me a little bit of breakfast sausage. That's about all I want. But that backstrap, man, I like, you know, I like to marinate it, get it seasoned right, and then I'll sear it on the grill. That's the way I like to do it.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I get a lot of questions about like how I prepare mine. It depends on what it is, you know.
Right.
I get mine ground up in a hamburger because I eat a lot of, you know, like deer chili and stuff during during the wintertime when it gets cold, and then I'll throw some on the grill, you know, in the summertime just for burgers and stuff like that. But you know, that backstrap, you know, I like to soak mine in buttermilk. And do it that way. And then there's a lot of different ways you can do it. But, you know, I just wanted to see as a, you know, background in barbecue, you know, if there was a different way that you did it, you know.
Yeah, that's about it, though. That backstrap, man, that's going to do it every time.
You do any waterfowl hunting?
So 2 years ago, a very good friend of mine, Roger Nelson, shout out to Roger, he took me duck hunting. He has a duck hole on his family's part. His family got a bunch of land down there where I'm from too. And he took me duck hunting, and that's something you talk about getting in your system.
Mm-hmm.
Man, oh my goodness. I was so mad I hadn't done it before. So I just went for the first time 2 years ago, but that is definitely a part of my, that's part of my repertoire now. I got to go. Even if I got to go out on deer hunting, I got to go duck hunting.
Yeah, well, we'll talk off air about that too. So
okay, I need that one for sure.
Yeah, I got bit with the bug hard. I don't know if you listen to any of my other podcasts, but since I got you right here in front of me, I'll tell you kind of the backstory. So
okay.
I got a buddy, Lance, and him and my best friend, Holden, anytime I go hunting, they're the ones that's usually with me. Lance grew up in Western Kentucky, in Mayfield, out that way. And so it's real big out there because Mississippi Flyway is out that way. Mm. So he grew up, and he said, man, as big as a hunter you are, you ain't never been duck hunting? I said, nah, I just don't have a passion to go and shoot a duck. Like, I just don't see the fun in it. He said, man, he said, we're going to go. I said, all right. So got my duck stamp, you know, everything, got everything. And he's got a cousin named McKenzie, man. He's been duck hunting up there since he was probably 12, 13 years old. Like, he knows every hole up there. So I just started my outdoor business and everything. So I had my GoPro with me. We get to the boat ramp. I'm nervous as I don't know what. I was just like freaking out, shaking, just like I don't know what to expect, you know. So we get to the ramp. I'm sitting in the middle of the boat, freezing. I had these, you know, $10 waders on. I'm freezing to death. And McKenzie looks at me and said, all right, man, like we're about to go through this swamp. We're going to hit some stuff, but we won't flip over. We're going to hit some cypress trees, some nubs. We're not going to flip over. And I'm just sitting there looking at it. My eyes as big as a softball. I'm like, oh, no. So I'm just seeing trees, and he's flying in this boat. You know, he's going to. So we finally get to the hole. He's like, this is where we're going to hunt. And I said, where are we going to sit? He said, we're going to lean up beside that tree right there. I said, what do you mean? He said, we're going to stand up beside that tree, and when the ducks come in, we're going to shoot them. I said, we're standing up? He said, yeah, that's why I told you to wear your waders. I was like, all right. So they're setting out decoys. I'm over beside that tree just hugging it, and the only thing I can think about is gators and cottonmouths.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's cold outside, but I'm like, you know, I don't think no gators is going to be up here. And I said, you know, cottonmouths usually come out in the summertime. You know, it's in the teens, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right. So he cuts the boat off, parks it behind us. It's still dark. We got like an hour till daylight. And I'm just sitting there praying to God the whole time. Like, don't let me freeze to death. Don't let me get bit by nothing. Mm-hmm. So about 7:30 rolls around. He starts calling. Ducks start flying in. We're having a ball. And I look over to my buddy Lance. He's like, welcome to the show. And I'm like, all right, I'm hooked.
Yes, sir.
And since then, man, every year I've been out there, you know, I love it. You know, you start, you know, I got me some good waders now, so I stay warm. You know, I got me some good stuff where I'm actually can stay out there. Cause like, I was like, man, I don't know how y'all stand it out here. He's like, man, you got to make sure you get the right equipment.
That's right.
You know, so I started researching, you know, waders and, you know, merino wool socks and merino wool underlayers and stuff like that. So when I'm out there now, you know, I'm good.
Yeah. So,
but I got bit by the bug hard, man. Second to deer hunting, man, I think it's probably ducks. And I love turkey hunting. You know, I love just being out there. It's fun, you know.
It is. It really is, man. I went that first time, and it reminded me of the first time I went dove hunting, just because of the action. Mm-hmm. And that hole that my buddy got down there, man, is so ducked off, and it's really not that big, but that's kind of like perfect. And they were coming in so hard and from every angle. And I said, man, I can't believe I've been missing out on this. Like, I should have done this a long time ago, man. And so, like you said, that was just 2 years ago, so I've only been able to go out there with them that time. And last year, I was in the middle of moving, and I was telling them, I was thinking I was about to go back down there to Georgia just to do that, because I got to go. I have to go, man. Yeah, I got one or two that season, that first season I went. But it's like ever since then, I've been – when I'm online on YouTube and everything, that's what I'm looking at, man. Those folks out there in Arkansas, spots like that, but I got to go out there, man.
Yeah, I got a cousin. I'm gonna give you his number too. He owns his own construction business here in town. So if you can't get a hold of anybody that you're needing, like, he can pretty much do literally anything, plumbing, electric, everything. He's okay. He's dope at everything. Great. And I'm not saying that because he's my cousin. I'm saying that because I've literally seen this man, the house that he bought. Mm-hmm. And from what it looked like when he first bought it, he literally gutted the whole house. And if when I send you these before and after pictures, like, you'll be like, that's not the same house.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And he did it all. He did it all himself. Like, he's just dope. But he's a big duck hunter as well. And he used to duck hunt a lot back when I was in college. And he'd always try and get me to come out there. And I remember one morning, man, it was, I want to say it was Thanksgiving morning of like 2013. I was still in college at the time, but I, you know, went home to visit the family for Thanksgiving and stuff like that. And where they were hunting, I could hear him shooting. And kind of woke me up out of my sleep. And I looked at the clock. It was like 7 in the morning. And I walked outside. It was snow and frost and ice everywhere. I said, who in their right mind would be out hunting in this? And, dude, they come back and they had, I think they had a 4-man limited ducks. And my uncle, which is his dad, they come back and I said, what's wrong with them? He said, man, they need to be committed. It was like -5 degrees outside, dude. Oh, I mean, man. Snow everywhere. And then he's like, man, it's the best time to go. And now, I'm out there with him, you know, and we go quite a bit, me and him. He just stays busy so much.
Yeah.
It's hard for him to get out anymore, but he's usually with me too. You know, he's shown me a lot of things that he's learned throughout the years duck hunting, and Lance showed me some things, and then, you know, I'm still learning the ropes, you know.
Yeah.
But it's one of them things, man. It's just I try to pick up a piece of knowledge from everybody and kind of use it to my advantage, you know.
Yep.
So
I tell you, man, it was something me and my brother were just talking about not too long ago. It was like, man, like you said, it gets cold up here compared to Georgia. You know, it gets a little chilly down there.
Yeah.
But we were like, we're going to get a whole new set of gear, man. Once it gets like November, December, those clothes we were wearing down in Georgia, they're not going to get it. You know, they're not going to work up here through the winter, sitting up in a tree. Nah, and that wind start to biting you a little bit. I mean, I got to get a whole new wardrobe for outside, man.
Yeah, it gets cold up here, man. And I tell people, you know, Kentucky weather, it changes so much. Like one, you know, morning time, it might be 20 degrees. And then by 12 o'clock, it'll be 100 degrees. And that afternoon, it might be a tornado. Like, you just, right. You know, Kentucky weather changes so much, man. You just never know what to wear sometimes.
It's been, I know the past couple weeks, it's been raining so hard on and off. And it's like everybody I talked to has been like, man, it's never rained that much here. That's what everybody keeps saying. It's like
you might not have been up here. We had a big, it rained, it seemed like forever. We had a lot of floods and stuff up here.
Okay.
And like a bunch of the OGs, you know, around us was like, we've never seen that much rain. I mean, like a lot of the rivers around here were out of bank, you know, the creeks and people was, you know, losing their, like their basements was flooding, and it got bad there for a minute.
Wow, that's crazy.
But yeah, man. So, LaRue County, sorry. I was born and raised here, man. So, how has the community responded to y'all since y'all moved in? Has everybody been cool about it?
It's been an overwhelming amount of support, man. I'll tell you, it has been crazy. Like I said, we specifically with the people that have helped us, you know, get open. We kind of, when we first introduced ourselves to the people, we were telling them, hey, we're trying to get open in a fairly short amount of time. So if you have the time and ability to kind of come like tomorrow almost, can you let us know? And everybody, for the most part, has been able to do that. So definitely thank you to everybody who's helped us get open. You know, there were a lot of things we had to do to that building to, you know, modify it to get it right. And, it was the help of the community that helped us do that. And everybody we talked to, if they didn't know or couldn't do it themselves, they knew somebody that could, and they put us in contact. And it has really worked out really well, man. So it has been a very warm welcome here to LaRue County.
All right. Well, That's good, man. I was hoping everybody would give y'all a warm welcome, and I'm glad that's worked out for you so far. So, are there any plans to expand your business, like, down the road to another second location or anything like that, possibly?
Man, in my head, yes. Officially on paper, no. But like I said, this is kind of like the relaunching of this, and I have more of a heavy role in it than I did when I was younger. And I definitely, in my head, I want to take this thing as far as I can go. Where that will be and when, I don't know. But I definitely want this to be, I want Jackson Legacy Barbecue to be known wherever barbecue is mentioned. And that is my ultimate goal. And, you know, right now, that begins right here in the Rue County. And so to see the response, you know, that we got over these past 3 days has just been kind of reaffirming to me that we're at least headed in that right direction, you know. So at some point, yes, but right now, you know, our biggest thing is community. We want to make sure that we're serving the community in an efficient way. And so we, you know, we're gonna get this thing here rolling in a matter, and then we're gonna take it to the next level when it's time.
Yes, what's up, man? Well, future success. I hope everything works out for you, man. I hope to see you here for the long haul, man. And I hope we can, you know, become good friends and get out and do some hunting and stuff together. And if Absolutely. You ever need me for anything, man, just holler at me.
I definitely will, man. I appreciate you 100%. Thank you.
Yes, sir. So now, man, I like to do this thing, what they call, it's called rapid fire. I kind of ask you a few questions and you answer them as fast as you can. And it should be fun.
All right.
So ribs, brisket, pulled pork, which one's your guilty pleasure? Which one would you prefer?
Brisket.
Sweet sauce or vinegar-based?
Vinegar.
If you could cook for any celebrity, what are you cooking for them and who are you cooking for?
Rick Ross, and I think I'll do some ribs for Rick Ross.
All right, expand on that for me.
Rick Ross.
Bob Rick Ross.
Rick Ross is one of my favorite rappers.
Okay.
And the reason I would do ribs for Rick Ross is because he's a businessman.
Okay.
And I would present to him a business model to where I would make sure he loved the food, and then I would tell him how ribs are a barbecue staple and they don't take all night. That's the thing about brisket and pork butts, they take so long to cook. But ribs, you can do it in a matter of a couple hours. So I present this business model to him, get him to invest some money, and we would take ribs across the country the same way he did Wingstop.
That's what's up. That makes sense. Yeah, he's a big businessman, so yeah. Makes sense. All right, let's keep going. Mustard greens, collard greens.
Ooh, collard greens.
Macaroni and cheese, green beans.
Mac and cheese.
Deer, squirrel, rabbit. Food wise, not hunting wise.
Oh, to eat?
To eat.
Rabbit.
Fire. So To be honest, that's one of my favorite things. I haven't had it in a really long time because my favorite person in the world to cook rabbit for me was my Uncle Randall, man. He passed around the 2008-2009 in a car wreck, man. But literally, that man would go out any time of the day, pretty much, you know, during rabbit season. He'd get, you know, and he'd be like, man, y'all want some rabbit? Like, yeah, come on, let's go. I go down this little dirt road, and he'd go down another road. I hear him shoot.
Yeah.
And if you hear him shoot that one time, you know he's got a rabbit. That man was a dead eye with that little single shot.
Huh.
And he'd go back in there, and he had this little concoction made up, and he kept it in like one of them big pepper jars, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what he had in there, man, but that rabbit was so tender, and it had so much seasoning and flavor. And I've been trying to get that ratio right, but I can't figure out what all he's got in there. I've tried everything known to man, and I can't think of. I mean, he would fry it, you know, and
that's
my favorite way of having it. But
that's how I like it too, with a little bit of gravy on it.
Yeah, a little bit of gravy, man. Can't beat it, man.
No sir.
So 30-06, 308.
30-06.
308 is my favorite caliber. of all time. You can't beat them 30 cals, though.
You cannot.
Crossbow, compound bow. I know the answer to this because we already talked about it.
Yeah, I'm about to say crossbow right now. But
gotcha.
That's because that's all I got experience with.
So are there any hunting or barbecue fail stories that you can that you can look back and laugh about now that you want to share?
Yes, there are. So let's see. Barbecue wise, the first time I ever tried to do a brisket, and my daddy told me how long it took. I said, I got it. This wasn't for the business or anything like that. But the first time I ever tried to do a brisket, it was for some event. I can't remember what it is. But anyway, I fell asleep on it. And I woke up the next morning with everybody else, and they're expecting some brisket. And it was still about halfway done. So we had brisket that day. So learned that lesson. Hunting fails. Well, I'll tell you this. Shoot. When I was a kid, I missed probably 6 to 7 deer before I ever killed my first one.
Oh, man.
Yes, and I was just simply off of shaking because I was so nervous. You know, when I first started hunting, I was hunting with my dad, and pretty much the way that went, if we saw something, he shot it, and I dragged it out the woods. But when I first started hunting by myself and was, you know, like just hunting by myself, and he told me, so you're going to get nervous and you're going to shake, because anytime I see a deer with him, I never was nervous, but I wasn't the one shooting, so that's why. Man, them first couple of times I had some deer walk out in front of me, man, I couldn't hold nothing steady. I'm sitting here. So, yeah, I missed like 6 or 7 deer before I ever killed one. And I don't even know if I ever told anybody else that. I think the only person who knew that, my dad and my brother, actually. But, yeah, that's the truth. I missed them multiple deer before I ever killed my first one.
That's funny. What's one thing about Clarence Jackson most people don't know?
Most people don't know. You know, I try to be transparent as much as I can. What don't people know about me? I really enjoy jazz music.
Okay. Who's your favorite jazz musician?
Probably Kenny G.
Okay.
But I do like some older, I like Coltrane.
Hey, you can't beat Johnny. Johnny's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean? I say Kenny G's my favorite. And the reason for that is, so my grandmother, my mom's side, who recently passed in November, I used to spend summers with her in Chicago. So my mom's from Chicago. And every summer growing up, I would go spend the whole summer with just my grandma and granddaddy in Chicago. And I was getting spoiled the whole summer. And for some reason, it stuck with me, but that's what they love to listen to. My granddaddy had these Kenny G tapes on repeat the whole time as a kid. And at the time, it just was kind of mellow and relaxing, but it stuck with me. And then in middle school, I was in the band. I played the saxophone. And when I was playing the saxophone, my music instructor, one day he was showing us a video of Kenny G playing the sax. And I didn't know that's who I was listening to as a kid, but something triggered in my brain and everything came back. And pretty much since then, I've just always tried to listen to jazz music. I'll play random jazz music videos. Like, they'll be like 24 hours long on YouTube in the background while I'm working and stuff. And I'm just listening to the saxophone and just smooth music in the background. It kind of helps me stay focused, having that mellow vibe.
That's what's up. Yeah, I'm a big blues guy.
Okay.
So jazz, blues, they kind of go. I like the old blues, the old Delta blues. I like the electric blues. Like I collect old vinyl blues, R&B, you know, James Brown, anywhere from Muddy Waters to James Brown to Stylistics, the Drifters. Like,
man, you and Miles are going to get along very well. Miles plays the guitar, and he is, I'm not just saying it because he's my brother, but that man can play the guitar, man.
Does he do lessons? Because
he probably could, actually. Yeah.
My dad, I always told my father, as much as I love the blues, I was going to learn how to play the guitar. And I started taking lessons from a guy in Bardstown about 3 years ago. We had like 4 sessions together. Everything was going good. I was learning, you know, finger placement, you know, and everything. And I was like, you know, my dad passed at 14. you know, so I was like, you know, going to the graveside, telling dad, like, hey, dad, you know, I'm learning. Yeah. So give me some time. And then his dad, the guy that I was taking lessons from, ended up getting sick. So I haven't heard from him in like 3 years. So I've been trying to find somebody to like continue teach, because I done forgot everything that I learned. But I always wanted to learn how to play the blues, man, because that was just one thing, man, that was drilled into me since I was a kid, because my dad, man, you know, just growing up in Memphis, like, I love blues music.
I know you heard a lot down there, but yeah, Miles definitely, he'll definitely get, yes. Especially now you told me that, like, yeah, we'll make that happen.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. So, what biggest piece of advice would you give somebody wanting to open their own business, whether it be barbecue, anything? Like, what's the biggest piece of advice that you can give them?
The biggest, best piece of advice I could give anybody who's trying to get started as an entrepreneur is to get right with God first. And the reason I would say that is because that's what it took for me. Like, right before all this started happening, man, I went through a crazy period of time in life, and I ain't even going to belabor the point, but I will tell you, a year ago from Thursday, which is when we opened up, a year to the day, I got fired from my last job. And from that point to now has been nothing but a roller coaster. And I kind of talked about some of it with the hurricane and moving to Cali and all that kind of stuff. But over the course of that point, over the course of that time period, I will tell you that what happened, and I can only say that now because I'm realizing it, is God had to humble me a little bit and get me back focused on him, because I was raised in a very spiritual household. But, you know, going to college and starting life out on as an adult on my own, I was just doing my own thing, focused on myself. But when I just honestly got to just a low point, to be frank with you, and I had to turn to God and started being genuine, not saying God help me because I'm in a low point, but genuinely trying to figure out what God wanted me to do, what my purpose was in life, that's when it all started lining up. And from that point on, what I realized is that entrepreneurship is spiritual because of all that it takes, all that it requires of you. And from my point of, you know, my point of view, I am a believer in God, and I understand that, I believe that there are things that have happened over the course of opening up this business that could not have been planned or strategized by me or anybody in my family. So just me personally, that is what I believe in. We were actually originally wanting to open up July 15th. But then when I got fired from that job, I knew it was something behind that, because I did not get fired because like a performance, or basically I was a manager at that place, and I got fired because of something one of my employees did that I had no control over. That's a short version. But I knew that I was about to begin something next. I knew there was some purpose behind that. So I kept the separation notice that I got. Some told me to keep it, and I got it in my book bag right now. And we were sitting as a family discussing when we wanted to open after we signed the lease to the place. And that next day, so we settled on July 15th. That next day, I looked at the separation notice, and it said the date. And my mom had already pitched the idea of opening July 4th weekend, just because everybody's going to be moving around, and that's a big barbecue time in general. But we were like, man, that's a short amount of time to get ready. Well, I looked at that separation notice. The next day I said, let's do it. And that's how we ended up doing it.
That's what's up. That's probably the best answer that I've ever gotten when I've asked that question.
I appreciate it.
And it makes a lot of sense, because, you know, I've had a bunch of, you know, hills to climb in my day, man. And, you know, when I got to college, man, long story short, I met some 5%ers. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not.
Yeah.
And, dude, I hated anybody that didn't look like me for like 2 years. And I was like searching for the truth. And I grew up in a very religious family, very, very religious family. And, you know, when I got out on my own, you know, they were putting stuff in my head that just didn't belong there. But at the time, from where I grew up here, everything they were saying made sense. It was making sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I happened to go home one one day. It was kind of mid-December. Dad wasn't home, Mom wasn't home. They were up visiting some relatives of mine, and Dad always kept his Bible on the coffee table right there as soon as you walk in the door, and it was closed. Well, I fell asleep on the couch or whatever. I woke up, and I was, like, real hot, like, burning up. And I'm like, am I getting sick? Like, what's going on? But my eyes were still closed, and I could, like, literally see, like, fire. Mm. And it was, like, a weird, and I, like, walked outside. And basically, the Lord was taking me through his birth all the way through the resurrection, and I could literally see it in the sky when I walked outside.
Mm.
And I always tell you, God will always bring you to your knees somehow, some way.
Yes, sir.
And I just fell on my knees and start praying. I opened my eyes, and pitch black dark outside. It's freezing. And I'm in nothing but my underwear and a t-shirt. I run back in the house, man. I'm like, how in the world did I end up out here? I go back in the house. Bible's open. Something they're like, I know that Bible was closed when I walked in this house. Guess what passage was sitting there waiting on me to read? I felt it in my heart just to just start reading. And it was Prodigal Son.
Hmm.
Boy. And tell me God ain't real.
Listen, man. Man, yeah, we're going to be here. We can sit here and talk all night because I can resonate with that so much, man. Just it was a period of time in my life when I knew better. And for whatever reason, I was doing my thing. And maybe it was because I grew up in such a religious household that I felt like I wanted to exercise some freedom that I didn't have as a kid or whatever it was. But like you said, God got a way of bringing you back to him.
He got a way of bringing you back, man. I'm telling you, I went back to school. I was like, hey, y'all, like, Muhammad sounds cool and everything, but
yeah,
I'm gonna stick with Jesus on this one, you know.
Yes, sir.
They was like, oh, you a Uncle Tom and this and that. And y'all can call me whatever you want, you know, but I said, hey, Jesus done revealed something to me. So, you know, I went and told my dad and stuff about it. I never really told my mom about the whole situation. Well, I kind of did, but, you know, mom was one of them old school, you know, Southern Baptists, you know. So I was like, I don't really want to talk to mom about this. This is something I need to talk to pops about. And he said, well, I'm glad you're back. And he said, anytime you ever want to go down that track again, he said, you remember that story? He said, you start praying and he'll bring you back. I said, yeah, I know, Papa. I said, you know how it is when you're young, you know, you get out on your own for the first time, you think you grown.
That's it.
Think you know everything. Can't nobody tell you nothing. The people just start planting stuff in your ear, man. It's just, I tell young people now, man, like, what your family and mom and daddy, whatever has, you know, instilled in you from a young child, there's a reason they're doing that. So exactly. Once you get out on your own, you know right from wrong, you know which way to go. And so, yeah, you're going to have your bumps and your bruises. You're going to get off track. But I said, you'll come back. I promise you.
Yeah, he going to bring you back. And
bring you back.
He did it. And it's one thing I can say for me, looking back now, I had some warnings to do it the nice way, and then he had to do it the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, now I understand why I was brought up the way I was brought up and why I heard about God so much from my parents. Cause now I'm definitely gonna be doing the same thing to my kids when I have them. So I get it now. And they always say, you know, your parents always tell you, you'll understand one day, just keep living.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suck, man. I had my son, man. I get it. Cause I put my family through hell. You know, I was a good kid. You know, I was a little mischievous. Yeah. So was my son, you know, but you know, I'm raising him the same way my parents raised me. You know, sometimes he gets mad at me for stuff I make him do or, you know, whatever. But I was like, Bub, eventually, like, you'll get why I'm doing this. And, you know, One day. It took a long time for me to realize, you know, once I got out on my own, I was like, okay, I get it. I understand. Yeah. Appreciate y'all, you know.
Yeah. Yes, definitely so. Definitely.
Yeah, man. So, Clarence Jackson, once you are dead and gone in the grounds, what do you want people to remember you and Jackson Legacy? Like, how do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered as someone who loved his family. I want to be remembered as someone who publicly exercised his faith. And I want to be remembered as somebody who did right by everybody.
So I want That's to be what's remembered. Up. That's what's up, man. Clarence Jackson, everybody.
Yes, sir.
Thank Wish you. I had a soundboard because I can get everybody's clapping for you right now. I'm getting one, ladies and gentlemen. I'm getting a soundboard pretty soon. But
man, I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Taking the time out to do this. And man, like I said, if I could do anything for you to ever help you out, you just let me know. And proud to have you here in LaRue County, man. And I hope you're here to stay and get some hunting done, man. And
absolutely.
Invite you over for some Thanksgivings and some Christmases and stuff like that, man. If you don't go Absolutely. Back to Georgia, man, my door is always open to you, brother.
Man, I appreciate you. And likewise, man, anything I could possibly do, I know I'm new here, but if you need some help, even if you need somebody to move some boxes or whatever, man, you got my number. I'm here.
That's what's up, man. I appreciate y'all. Yes, sir. Big game, small game, all game. We do this too. See y'all later. You're about to go off the screen, but you'll come right back up.
Okay.
Country boy. Oh, yeah. I get up before the rooster. I'm up. Put on my camo. Yeah. Load up my bow and my rifle and stock the ammo. I'm a bullet with the bullet, but I'm lethal with the arrow. Always down for the hunt. Dub turkey and big buck. Hit the woods and get fitted up. Mossy, y'all call across my fit. Don't be surprised. We do this too.
I get up before the sun. My 30 at 6. Yeah. All body on, I ain't worried about the kick. Yeah, we do this too.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.